Good morning, Spokane. Good to be back with you today. Really is. Yeah, thank you. As Gary mentioned, Jane is up in Canada. And so today, I'm Jane. Jane is... You want to take a picture of that? That may not resonate very well with Gary that I'm Jane, but it's a turn. Some of you may know yesterday was the 150th birthday of Canada. Yes. And Jane and I have that connection in that we're both native sons and daughters of Canada. And she's celebrating with her family. I celebrate. We had a dinner party last night, and I made a cake that looked like a Canadian flag. Made it out of strawberries. I meant to bring a picture of it, but better than the picture, some of it still left over. And I brought it so when you're going through the line after church, you can... It doesn't look like a flag anymore, but it's it's doing good. Before Jane left, she said, I'm doing this 12-pop series, and I'd like to have you do one of those 12 powers. Which one would you like to do? And I said, zeal. That's me. That's the one that I appreciate and enjoy so much. So today we're going with zeal. Whoops. There's the slide. Yeah. We're going with zeal. And we're talking about the happiness of pursuit. Dan was an 80-year-old guy who still enjoyed chasing girls. But one day he said, I'm going to ask my wife if she minds if I still chase girls. And she said, dogs chase cars, but they can't drive. So it made me think that perhaps the joy is in the chase, not in the catch. Have you ever thought about that? I want to have you consider that idea this morning. As we once again prepare, by the way, 41 years ago this week, I became an American citizen right here on this platform. So now we switch from Canada Day to our day, the 4th of July, and share that. So we're going to observe that, and one of the things, of course, in the Declaration of Independence has to do with our inalienable rights. And one of those rights, it says in there, is the pursuit of happiness. You know, I've read that and I've talked about it over the years, but I never really understood the word inalienable. So I finally Googled it and looked it up. And it means something that is eternally yours that can never be taken away from you. And so think about that for a moment. We know that who we are, our lives, whether in the body or out of the body, your life, your spirit life cannot be taken away from you. It is inalienable. And we know that liberty, the freedom of choice and volition, is inalienable. It is always yours. We remember Viktor Frankl's great book, The Search for Meaning. And he, even though he was in prison, he knew that his ability to make choices and to determine what things mean was inalienable. He could still do that, even under Nazi domination. We also know that whatever we are holding on to right now in our lives, we know this too, including our bodies, we're inevitably going to have to let all of that go. Everything on this planet. But one thing you may not ever have to let go of is the chase, the pursuit. That may remain with you forever. In fact, that may be one of your strongest traits and spiritual powers. Will we ever stop exploring? Will we ever stop inquiring, asking, searching, seeking, knocking, sleuthing? I don't think so. I think we're going to continue to do that on and on. Jesus suggested that heaven was not a place where you lie down on a cloud and rest. It is not a place of stopping. The Greek word that he used was ouranos, which means to expand. It means to grow. It means becoming. So that's what's in store for us after we let go of this body, is more of the same. That's what heaven is all about. Hell may be just the opposite of that, not exploring, sitting still, trying to hold on to things, and stagnating. That might be a good definition for hell. So the premise that I think our forefathers were trying to get us to understand is that happiness in and of itself is not ours forever. But the pursuit of it is always ours. Actually, pursuit is the antithesis of happiness. Happiness is not our goal. But if you haven't noticed, it is the pursuit of your goal, the pursuit of your destination, your bucket list, where you are happiest. That's where you find the juice for living. How many of you have read The Arabian Nights? Few of you? Good. If you haven't read it, you probably know the story. Scheherazade was the queen whose stories make up this great adventure, The Arabian Nights. And she, I think we all share her fate. Scheherazade became the wife of the Sultan of Persia. And he had a decree that every woman he married would be killed on the morning after the wedding. I think this man had a serious intimacy problem. I don't know about that. I think so. Anyway, Scheherazade wanted to put a stop to this decree, this rule. So on the day of their wedding, she began telling the Sultan a story, but she stopped just short of the finish of the story. And she told him to be continued. And the Sultan agreed to let her live one more day so she could get the rest of the story and finish the story. The next day, she finished that story, but then, guess what? She started another one, stopping once again just before the finish of the story. And again, the Sultan let her live to see how that story played out. And this went on for 1,001 nights. The Sultan, in the meantime, was falling deeper and deeper in love with Scheherazade. And finally, he was so in love with her that he gave up the decree altogether, and they went on to be with one another. What this story says to me is the commitment to forward movement, to be continued, the momentum that we have is a life-saving quality in our lives, a virtue that if we do not want to die physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever way, we have to get in sync with life. And life, in case you didn't know, moves. It moves on. Always has and always will. So in essence, if we stop moving forward and adding to the dialogue of our lives, the story of our lives, we're dead in the water. We really are. If we stop our narrative from moving forward, stop pursuing, which is such a life-giving thing to each and every one of us, we are dead in the soul sense of being dead. So Scheherazade's secret was continuing to create passion when there wasn't any. Continuing to create an ongoing dialogue and conversation beyond the moment. To be continued. I believe this is a life-giving secret for you and for me. I know it is for me. I wouldn't be standing before you this morning if I wasn't still pursuing and questing and sleuthing, curious about this and that and everything else. We don't stop at our goal. We don't stop at someone's pronouncement or diagnosis or whatever else somebody says, stop. Maybe we do for a moment, but we don't stop. We keep on, and we wonder why something is around the corner or something else is available to us at that particular time. We don't just catch our prey and devour it and then stop. We don't just find our niche and sit in it. We don't just settle down, settle in, settle for less. We pursue. We pursue. And in continually pursuing, our story, our dialogue, our life, our very life moves forward in that time. I've come to believe right now for me that my most essential spiritual quality is the power of zeal. It's my impulse to keep going and moving forward with my life in questing, in exploring, seeking and knocking. That's what keeps all systems moving in me, figuratively and literally. Zeal, of course, is one of the spiritual powers that Charles Fillmore articulated. I'm teaching an online class in the 12 powers to Unity students all over the United States and some foreign countries right now. So zeal is one that I pay special attention to. The dictionary says, zeal is great energy or enthusiasm in pursuit of a cause, an objective, or an answer. And some of its synonyms are passion, ardor, fervor, fire, devotion, enthusiasm, eagerness, keenness, an appetite, relishing, gusto, vigor, intensity. That's what are some of the synonyms to this particular name. The philosopher Blaise Pascal, or Pascal, however you want to pronounce that, once said that all of our miseries arise out of not being able to sit quietly in a room alone. But surely some of our miseries, it seems to me, derive from too much time sitting quietly in a room alone. Stretched out on our lazy boy, a remote control in one hand and a beer in the other. Or sitting with our legs pulsating under our desk at work. Our body's raring to go, but we're not. We're sitting still. Especially as we get older, it seems to me that our orbits seem to narrow down to a few beaten paths, a handful of faculties and muscles in our body, the company of the same people and the same clique, same ideas, the same small wedge of experience which excludes, it seems to me, whole universes of fascination and possibility, pleasures that we haven't even thought about yet, whole continents of people, all the while we're living under this mistaken guise of safety and contentment and pseudo-happiness when we do that. When he was in his 20s, the traveler Bruce Chatwin, and by the way, his surname means winding path, he was an art expert that worked for Sotheby's Auction House, and it was his job to examine all the artwork that came in and value it. He found the job increasingly distasteful, and one morning he woke up blind. And the doctor said, after examining, there's nothing organically wrong with you. The only thing I can tell you is that you've been looking too closely at pictures. And why don't you swap them for a new horizon? So he quit his job, packed his things up, and bought a ticket to Africa. And he reports that by the time he got to the airport, his eyesight had been fully renewed and recovered. Perhaps the quintessential human survival skill is something called neophilia. That's the zeal for novelty. And it is the heart of the exploratory urge in each and every one of us. It's learning a new skill. It's investigating a new way of doing things, poking around in an antique shop, trying out a new relationship. The grand design of neophilia is learning, growing, pursuing, and creating. And if you're involved in this, then you then are a moving target, so that the world of settling, the world of hardening of your arteries can't find you, doesn't know where you are. It is as though life is continually saying to us, don't go wide and shallow, go deep and long. Perhaps the most important statement that I can make of myself today is, David, I am on to something. I am on to something. If you are not on to something today, you are making preparations to leave the planet. Let me tell you, you really are. Whether you actually attain the thing you're on to is beside the subject. The important thing is that you're onto it. The important thing that is you've picked up the scent and you are on your way to it. You are moving. And that's because you are a verb, not a noun. I don't know if you knew that about yourself. You are not static. You are not an object of that is static. You are action. You are an activity, as Donna said in her meditation. And if you are anything, you are a pursuer. There's a musical that was on Broadway back in the 60s called A Funny Thing Happened to Me on the Way to the Forum. Some of you may remember that. It was a very funny musical. Notice that the funny thing did not happen at the Forum. It happened on the way to the Forum. And that's where most of the fun in your life is, on the way to your goal, on the way to your destination. That's where the happiness and the fun lies. When Jesus was talking about the key to happiness and fulfillment, the kingdom of heaven, he used action words, ask, seek, knock. Nowhere can I find in Jesus' teachings, sit. So it's important that we continue our pursuit. Today I'm advocating for you a roving mind. a roving mind and a busy body. Because the planet upon which we live is spinning on its axis right now as I speak to you at 1,000 miles an hour. And in an orbit around the sun at 65,000 miles an hour, in a solar system traveling at 540,000 miles an hour, around a galaxy which is charging through the universe at 670 miles per hour, in a universe that is expanding at 160,000 miles per second per megaparsec, whatever that means. And it's doing it right now as we're sitting here. I don't know what that means to you, but personally, even if I'm sitting in a room alone in the lotus position, which I don't get into very much anymore, I'm moving at 1.5 miles per hour. And the chair or the cushion that I'm sitting on is moving just as fast too. The fact that you're sitting on that chair is because of all the molecules and particles in it that are vibrating and moving and making it solid so you can sit on it. Everything knows the secret of movement and the power of that movement. Motion is everything on this planet and out of it. In order for matter to exist, it must move faster than the blink of an eye. And without it, nothing is solid. So I don't know what your economic status is, what your age is, how many children and grandchildren you have, what your health is. Motion is required of you. Verbs are required of you. It is essential to the very creativity and happiness of your life. Look at animals. Someone from Scraps is here today, and you notice how, I don't know if Marley does this here, but dogs circle around in a certain pattern before lying down. Horses will get on their feet after an hour of after being born, and they're ready to move because the herd will be moving and they need to be moving with them. So they get ready to move immediately. The heritage of humanity and all of its creatures has always been nomadic. Movement. More people moving to Canada these days for some reason. I'm not sure exactly. There's always only been one cure for boredom, and that's curiosity. And by the way, there is no cure for curiosity whatsoever. That's the nature of the beast that we are. And God has placed in every one of us an ancient itch that is always asking to be scratched. There's a study that was done by Joseph Chilton Pierce in which mothers of 11 to 17-month-old children expressed verbal constraints like no, don't. And the average, they did it every 9 minutes. This was even further accomplished by physical restraints that were put on them and punishment if they didn't stop doing whatever it was they were doing. It's kind of like this. Yeah, there, let me go back and show you him. Yeah. Whoa there, Charlie. It's kind of like the mother kangaroo is looking into her pouch and yelling, stop that, don't make me come in there. The tragic thing is more often than not, children will eventually choose to behave themselves in order to preserve their bond with their caregivers. even over their own desire and their own will to explore and pursue. The children's existence is eventually broken down, it seems, and so is their exploratory urge. We call it domesticating and socializing. For all its charms and its comforts, domestication is a walling up and a walling in. And once we are walled in, we tend to become unzealed in our life. We lose our sense of being free to migrate, to ripen, to strike out on different paths of discovery, which has always characterized our few 100,000 miles of existence. But I'm here to tell you that the seed of movement and motion, the fire of zeal in your spirit, cannot be bred out of you by anything or anyone. It remains to be nurtured, to be cultivated, and rekindled once again. The call of the road, the call of the wild, doesn't go away. It stays with us. It is a calling. It's calling you right now. Did you know that? It is. And if it isn't answered or even acknowledged, it will shift shape you into something puny and pathetic. Psychologists tell us there's a fine line between repression and depression. Our freedom is truly one of our inalienable rights and attributes. Do not deprive yourself of it, no matter what anybody tells you. Someone in a class that I taught several years ago asked me, can you estimate the number of good days versus the number of bad days that you have? And I had to think about that for a moment. And I knew that this person wanted a percentage, wanted a number. And so I finally said 60-40, 60 good days, 40 bad days. And that seemed to satisfy his curiosity for the time being. But when I thought about it, I thought, what is a good day anyway? How do you know when you're having a good day? We learn in unity that every day is a good day, no matter what's going on. So you could say, 100% I have good days. But perhaps a good day is a day you've reminded yourself to be grateful. Then it's only 70% good days. Or a day in which your accomplishments or your interactions in relationships have been good. That's a good day for you. Then it's maybe 50-50. A day that you believe you're just fine the way you are. Thank you very much. I don't have to do anything to prove anything. Well, then maybe you've got 10% good days, if that is your schedule. All of these numbers represent a substantial failure of some kind. But at the core of my soul, I think a good day is not just a good old kumbaya kind of moment in my life. It's anything that's drawing me forward toward my spiritual home. That's a good day for me. And I don't always have good days, but that zeal spirit in me keeps calling me. And it's calling you too. It's the drawing, it's the yearning, it's the hoping, it's the wanting, and the walking step by step toward the horizon. Now, those are the days. So, there's a story about a funeral memorial service, and this friend passes away in a car accident, and he's joined by two other friends who pass away the same day. So all three of them are standing in heaven, and the angel is interviewing them and says, when you are in your casket and people are filing by, what would you like them to be saying about you? And the first guy says, well, I like to let them know that I was a great doctor, a loving family man. That's what I'd like to hear. Second guy says, well, I'd like them to say I was a caring husband and a good school teacher and loved my kids. And they asked the third guy what he would say, and he said, what I'd like to hear them say is, look, he's still moving. Well, I don't always move forward, but when I do, I like for people to say, look, he's still moving. So stay eager, my friends. God bless you.
And we are grateful that you're still moving. Very much so. So David was my first minister almost 40 years ago. So appreciate you still have your stuff, Bip. You still have your stuff. So unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of injury. No, for love in the presence of hatred, and for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors many names for God, the many paths to God, the many ways of worshiping God. For we know that there is only one power and one presence that is God, and that God loves us all equally. So whoever you are and wherever you are in your transformational journey, if this is your first time with us at Unity Spiritual Center, we'd like to welcome you. If you feel comfortable by raising your hand, our ushers have a packet of information that they'd like to come bring to you. Anybody here for the first time?